Hey everyone, I wanted to give you a heads up that the highly anticipated second season of the hit podcast Proof is finally here. So if you're looking for more true crime content, go check it out because Proof is an awesome investigative true crime podcast co-hosted by Susan Simpson of Undisclosed and Jacinda Davis of Evil Lives Here. Proof made headlines for its first season in 2022 after proving the innocence of two Georgia men serving life sentences for murdering their friend, Brian Bowling, when they were just 17 years old. And 25 years later, on December 8th of 2022, both men were finally freed, all based on evidence unearthed by Proof. Now in the second season of Proof, Murder at the Warehouse, Susan and Jacinda are on the case again, this time traveling to the streets of Manteca, California to uncover who really murdered 18-year-old Renee Ramos. On June 5th of 2000, Ramos's body was found buried under a pile of debris inside the shell of a new Home Depot building. Despite tips hinting at alternate suspects, tips that were ignored until now, Renee's boyfriend, 18-year-old skateboarder Jake Silva, and Ty Lopez, the 33-year-old uncle of one of Jake's close friends, were arrested and convicted of her murder. Fans of true crime and investigative series won't want to miss this riveting new season and follow the case as Susan and Jacinda uncover long overlooked evidence about what really happened to Renee by listening to Proof, Murder at the Warehouse, wherever you get your podcast. Hey guys, I'd like to introduce you to a new podcast that I know you're going to love. Do you like travel? Do you like picturesque locations and getting away from it all? Well, this new podcast has all that and murder. It's called Slaycation and it's a darkly humorous look at murders and mysterious deaths that took place on vacation. Hosted by a true crime fanatic, her comedy writer husband and his TV producing partner, Slaycation brings a unique perspective to chilling, thrilling, and WTF stories of vacations gone horribly wrong. From the twisted tale of Harold and Tony Henthorne, whose romantic anniversary in the Rocky Mountains ended with one of them falling off a cliff, to Angelica and Vincent, two recently engaged lovebirds whose Hudson Valley kayaking adventure ended underwater. Each episode of Slaycation will have you asking, accident or murder? But it's not just the stories that'll intrigue you. It's the discussion between a longtime married couple and business partners who happen to be Emmy-nominated TV producers. Each episode of Slaycation also includes humor, takeaway and travel tips that will keep your next vacation from being your last. If you're ready to pack your body bags, Slaycation is available on all major podcast platforms. Search for Slaycation on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome back for another episode of Twisted News, where we get you up to speed on some of the strangest stories currently happening all around the world. First up today, a very terrifying home invasion that police don't believe actually happened. And then a case down in Florida, where three family members were found deep down under the waters of Tampa Bay. Get ready for Scary Mysteries, Twisted News. Number 1. The Real-Life Gone Girl Case. At 11:30 a.m. on March 23rd of 2014, Aaron Quinn woke up on his downstairs couch at his home in Vallejo, California, with his legs and wrists taped together with duct tape. Groggy, he broke free and checked his emails before calling his brother, who was an FBI agent, and telling him about what had happened the night before. His brother instructed him to call 911 immediately, and so that's what he did. When the police arrived, they could tell that Aaron wasn't acting right, and asked if he was on drugs, to which he told them, "Yes, I was drugged last night by a masked intruder, and he kidnapped my girlfriend." The night before, Denise Huskins, who was his girlfriend, had come over with a pizza so that they could talk. They had been going through a rough patch and looking to work things out, and they planned to, so Denise ended up staying the night, but something traumatizing would happen before dawn. Aaron, as he would go on to tell the police, woke up in the middle of the night to some white flashes of light and a red dot running across the walls. Before he knew it, a man was standing in his bedroom, dressed head to toe in a wetsuit with a mask on. He told the couple, "Get up, this is a robbery. We're not going to hurt you." The intruder proceeded to have the pair zip-tie themselves, their feet and then wrists, before shoving them into the confines of their own closet. The man then put goggles over their faces, which had been covered in duct tape so they couldn't see. The headphones were then placed over their ears, and a recorded message played which explained that they would be given a sedative now, and if they didn't take it, it would be administered intravenously. The message also mentioned Quinn by name, and he was a target for sure. After that, Aaron was told that his girlfriend was going to be taken for 48 hours, and in that time, Aaron was going to have to complete a set of tasks in order to get her back. He would be given an email address to use, and that he should call out sick from work while he handled the business at hand. At that point, Aaron was brought downstairs and duct taped before being placed on the couch. He was given a blanket and told that the camera that had been placed down there would be watching him and that he was not to leave so they could see his every move. The man then left with Denise in the trunk of Aaron's car. Before Aaron could do anything else, the sedative kicked in and he eventually passed out. When he woke up, he panicked, called his brother, and then called the cops. For the police, this sounded implausible, and so from the jump, Aaron was suspect number one. The authorities figured he had killed his girlfriend and then made up this entire story. Aaron would be interrogated, and the detectives clearly didn't believe him, but then, 2 days later and 400 miles away in Huntington Beach, California, Denise showed up close to her mom's house. She had been dropped off by the kidnapper and go on to tell the exact same story as Aaron, with the added fact that she had been assaulted by the kidnapper. As a result, the couple's plight drew eerie parallels to the fictional narrative of Gone Girl, leading to the media dubbing it the Gone Girl kidnapping. This comparison only fueled public doubt and sensationalism, overshadowing the grim reality of their situation. The media and police had made up their minds, and now everyone thought these two were some kind of con artists. And that's a look that doesn't wear off in the eyes of co-workers, friends, and families easily. Their ordeal only began to find closure 3 months later. In a separate investigation, police uncovered evidence linking a former Marine and disbarred attorney named Matthew Mueller to the crimes against Denise and Aaron. Mueller's apprehension and subsequent confession to the kidnapping brought a semblance of justice, and he was then sentenced to 40 years in prison. Yet even with the perpetrator behind bars, the couple's trials were far from over, and they faced not just the daunting task of rebuilding their lives, but also battling the stigma that had been unfairly cast upon them. And their professions, grounded in trust and care, were jeopardized by the shadows of doubt that lingered in the public's mind. The digital age, with its indelible memory, became a constant reminder of the misconceptions they had to endure. The couple's fight for vindication culminated in a lawsuit against the city of Vallejo, and their victory in 2018, resulting in a $2.5 million settlement, was not just about financial compensation, but about reclaiming their narrative and their dignity. And they were telling the truth, and even though the story was strange, it was real, and their tale tells of the fragility of truth in the face of preconceived notions. It underscores the peril of confirmation bias, particularly in law enforcement, where the consequences of such tunnel vision can be devastating. As Aaron poignantly reflects, their story is not just about a bizarre kidnapping, but about the failure of those sworn to protect and serve, recognize the truth that lay before them. Number 2, Unmasking of Oba Chandler. In the warmth of the Florida sun in June of 1989, the calm waters of Tampa Bay were shattered by a gruesome discovery. The bodies of 36-year-old Joan Rogers and her two teenage daughters, 17-year-old Michelle and 14-year-old Christy, floating lifelessly, their fate sealed by yellow ropes that had been tied to concrete blocks. The Rogers family, hailing from the quiet dairy farming community of Wilshire, Ohio, had headed out to Florida for a vacation that turned utterly tragic. Hal Rogers, the patriarch, had stayed behind to tend to the farm, unaware that his family's trip would end in unspeakable tragedy. As detectives dove into the investigation, the true brutal details emerged. The victims were found with their mouths taped shut, partially undressed from the waist down. And the cause of death was asphyxiation, though whether it was by drowning or strangulation was unclear. The absence of definitive evidence clouded the possibility of an assault on the women, as it appeared they had been in the waters for somewhere between 50 to 60 hours. There were only but a few haunting clues. The family's deserted car near the boat ramp, and inside it, a handwritten note that they would go on to discover did not match any of the handwriting of the three girls. The writing was directions to the boat ramp, and to be on the lookout for a white and blue boat. So, could the person who committed the crime have actually written it? Days passed before the women could even be identified. It came from a housekeeper at the Days Inn where the family was staying. When she saw the gruesome news on the TV, connected the disappearance to their unreturned hotel room. Suspicions briefly turned towards Joan's brother, John, who had his own problems with the law and a past of abusing one of the daughters, but his incarceration during the time of the murders cleared him of any involvement. The breakthrough in the case would come around 3 months later in October, when a Canadian tourist came forward with a chilling account of being assaulted on a boat with a man in the same bay just a month before the three women were found. This man had invited the girl out on a sunset cruise on his boat. Once out there, he got aggressive when she refused his advances, and he specifically threatened to tape her mouth shut and throw her overboard. Detectives tirelessly pursued this new lead, releasing a detailed composite sketch of the man, but nothing viable would come from it. Then in 1992, the authorities tried something new and unique, posting a handwritten note on billboards all across Florida, asking if anyone recognized it. And sure enough, somebody did. A citizen recognized the handwriting from a contract he had with an aluminum siding company, and it led investigators to Oba Chandler. Chandler, a figure with a checkered past marked by arrests and allegations of violent crimes, soon became the focus of a relentless pursuit. He owned the siding company, and his arrest was ultimately not just a moment of vindication for the detectives, but also a descent into the darker chapters of his life. His criminal history painted a portrait of a man long familiar with evading law enforcement. At his trial, Chandler's stance was unwavering, a proclamation of innocence despite overwhelming evidence to the contrary, including phone records placing him at the scene of the crime. His conviction for the murders brought a semblance of closure, but Chandler's story didn't end there. In a twist of fate, years after his execution, which happened in 2011, Chandler's shadow extended to another cold case. The murder of Evelise Bergeries. DNA evidence posthumously linked him to this additional heinous crime, adding another layer of horror to his legacy. His final note before being executed was a proclamation of innocence stating, "You are killing an innocent man today." It stands in stark contrast to the overwhelming evidence against him, leaving a couple of major lingering questions. How many more secrets did Oba Chandler take to his grave, and will they ever be solved? So there were two of the strangest stories that we have for you guys today. If you enjoyed it and you want more content from us or just want to show some support, please go check out our Patreon page. We have an entire library for you to check out, and you can sign up totally for free. Thanks to everyone who already supports us. It means a lot. And stay safe out there, guys. I'll see you soon.